Greetings and welcome to the very first episode of the CAG podcast. My name is Kur of the House of Lunkij, and I am the commander of the Dark Moon Fleet. I'm joined today by my two co-hosts.
Hello, my name is Jorn of the House Vampyr. I'm the XO of the Phoenix Rising Quadrant.
Hi, I am Javan of the family Dongying Shonshin.
Klingonbach.
In this episode, we'll be giving an overview of CAG, talking about where it began, what we do, how to join, and how to get more involved. We hope to answer a lot of questions that new and potential members may have about getting started in the club.
So how did you guys get involved in Klingons? You know, for me, I came through Star Trek. I watched Star Trek as a kid and joined a Star Trek fan club, eventually migrated into a Klingon character within that Fetty fan club. And then I found CAG and kind of joined it from there. But what about you guys?
Well, I started out years ago as a convention runner. And as a convention runner, I kept looking to the local fan groups to try and help present color at the convention, help do things at the convention, help present their particular fandoms. I could not really find any Star Trek related fans in Omaha that were doing anything. That's Omaha, Nebraska, that were doing anything. And so eventually I realized it was going to fall upon myself, and therefore I started working on a Klingon costume and got involved in Klingon fandom through CAG.
I have been an active member for extremely long time. For the longest time, all I got was just messages from, I believe they were the Yahoo boards. And I never did anything else beyond that because there's no members in my general area. And I lived in Alberta out in a town called Grand Cache, which is like 2 hours from like the closest nowhere's town. And when I got out here, they just started the website a year or two after my moving here, the keg.org, which you should sign up at. And I signed up there hoping that I can meet Klingons in my area, and there weren't any. And this kind of went on for a couple years after that. And it wasn't until very recently, once I joined this chat room, actually, that I really started becoming active involved in CAG, because at the same time we also got several members in our area to sign up, and we actually formed a ship. And this is honestly the most active I've been because I've actually been interacting with people.
Well, like I say, with the conventions, what I found is in the Klingon culture there are so many avenues that you can design various activities at conventions around to get all the convention participants to actually do something, to learn either a language or a culture, or get off their feet and throw things at each other in a courtship ritual, or just play a trivia game.
Yeah, CAG does it all. That's a good list of the different activities that CAG members can take part in, you know, at conventions or at other places. So then, you know, we've been talking about CAG and how we got into CAG, but where did CAG start? It started many, many years ago in a kitchen, I believe, in the early 90s. John Halverson started up CAG with a couple other people and decided he wanted to create a new Klingon club. So he started up CAG, and a few months later, they invaded Starbase Indy. They got up on stage in the middle of some Starfleet presentation and took over and claimed the convention for the Klingon Assault Group. And that's where we were born. We're one of the longest running clubs.
I was just told it was formed in about May 1989.
Well, I know it had to be early, about that early, because I've gone back through your records and found that your Mind Scanner magazines go all the way back to 1990.
Yeah, it was, I believe in 1989 was when it was started in the kitchen, and then in the convention at the end of that year. So it's right around 1990 that it was.
Why did the Mind Scanner start?
That's a good question.
Back in the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of fandom communicated with each other via these newsletters, via these fanzines that they would send a article in / letter in, get them all bound together, and then mailed out to all the participants on the list, just so diverse areas of the country could communicate with each other.
Yeah, there was no easy communication back then. You know, if you wanted to talk to a lot of people, you had to use the mail.
If you look at those early issues of Mind Scanner, they look like they were produced on a mimeograph machine, meaning their originals were actually, what, purple?
Maybe. We'd have to talk to John and see what he says.
And just for clarification, they are still ongoing. They just released the 99th.
Yep, we're chugging towards issue 100. But okay, so we've talked about where CAG started and what kind of things CAG members do. But how do we join CAG? Well, you go to CAG.org and you click on join. It's very simple. So anybody can join CAG as long as you're not a human or a member of the Federation, basically. We have all kinds of different aliens.
At one point, my wife was even working on a Ferengi costume to be part of CAG.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I've seen Romulans. I've seen Cardassians. In fact, there's a Cardassian on my ship. The second officer is a Cardassian. I've seen some very strange mashups of like 15 different aliens all squished together as well.
Well, one time when we did Klingon Iron Chef, we had the chef off of our ship, Klingon chef, on one side, and my wife did Ferengi as the other chef.
Where did you do the Iron Chef?
At a convention in Omaha, Nebraska.
Nice. Did you actually cook, or was it like pretend cooking?
For the last couple of years of Ozfest, we actually fed the audience. There is a whole list of recipes, Klingon recipes, in MindScanner.
That's pretty cool. Are you the only guys who do the Iron Chef, or is there other groups that do it across the country?
I don't know. It was an idea that we came up with. We actually stopped doing it as Iron Chef and just did it as a Klingon diner at the later conventions. But that just goes on to show you there's all kinds of activities that can be done.
For sure. There's so many different things that people can do in CAG. And it's not restricted to, you don't have to be a Klingon. That's the important thing. Is a lot of people ask me at conventions and things, if I join, do I have to be a Klingon? And often have to explain to people that no, we are the Klingon assault group. But as long as you swear loyalty to the Empire, then that's all that matters.
If you look at Enterprise, they ended up making the Andorians a warrior race also.
We have a number of Andorians.
Yeah, I've seen their pictures on the website. They look cool.
And another great thing about joining CAG is that it's free. You don't have to pay any dues.
Yep, no membership requirements besides signing up and obeying the rules of CAG, which there are only 5 rules of CAG. And as long as you obey those 5 rules, then everything's good. So what are those 5 rules?
The rules of CAG basically are: have fun, no live steal, don't embarrass CAG, make no treaties or alliances, and the Thought Admiral makes the rules. But the caveat to that is that the Thought Admiral doesn't like a lot of rules.
Rules just get in the way of having fun.
Which is rule number one.
Convenient.
Or circular, take your pick.
I think that's one of the things that's made CAG endure for so long and over any kind of turmoils that it's had in the past, because of those 5 simple rules. You don't have to do anything else besides having fun.
One of our members would like to know, how do I get a rank, from our chat room?
We'll cover that in a minute.
Yeah, it really doesn't, to be a part of CAG, to participate in CAG activities, you don't even need to have a uniform. We encourage people to get a uniform because they look so cool.
Right. You don't need any kind of anything else besides yourself.
And by get, we also mean not just buy, you can make it yourself.
We encourage people to make it themselves, because being a costuming group, it's all about the learning.
And the most fun I've had recently in relations to this fan group has been making my costume and working on new ideas.
Yeah, it's always fun to come up with new ideas and then bring them into fruition. So, you know, CAG is organized in a specific way. We have fleets and quadrants and ships spread off across the world.
When you join CAG, you're encouraged to find a ship that's in your area, because you're most likely to be able to go and meet and work with people who are in your area. Ships basically are the local group that is the backbone of CAG. From there, we organize up into quadrants. Quadrants organize up into fleets. Fleets make up CAG International.
For sure. And the CAG has a chain of command. We're not a military organization, but we play one. So we have like a play chain of command, so that if somebody has an issue, they can refer it to the person above them in the chain. And that person will usually have the experience needed to resolve whatever that issue might be. And if they don't, then they just pass it on to the next person, and it keeps going up until it hits some of the most experienced people in the club, and they usually know how to resolve most things. You know, I've been doing this for 20 years, and you see a lot of stuff over those years, and you learn how to deal with a lot of different situations that kind of pop up.
You can start out in CAG as either a member at large or a ship member, move up to a ship commander, the one in charge of all those ship members, then up to a quadrant commander. The fleet commander is above the quadrant commander, and then the Thought Admiral's on top of all those. A subcategory in there would be the division commander, which handles the Marine and Exo-Legion divisions, which are those alien races that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, they have their own nice little division just designed to support them and help them develop costumes and uniforms and stuff, things that they might not have access to or that may not be commonplace in the rest of CAG. You know, a lot of it does focus on Klingon activities and uniforms and culture, but there are some collections of other alien races and information about them.
Maybe we should have a quick explanation of the difference between the Marines and Imperial.
Actually, Marines and Navy.
Currently, the difference is mainly in costume, and Marines tend to have a few more activities that tend to be recruited for activities at conventions to do things like security and stuff like that, because they tend to be people who want to do that kind of thing. That's why they join the Marines. But the Marines themselves right now, they coexist within the Navy. For a time, they were a separate branch. They had their own structure. But over time, they've kind of moved back into the main bulk. And so everything is kind of within one giant system of communication, and there's no real separation like there used to be. And I think that's a good thing, because I think it makes it easier for members to communicate with each other.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I've never been in a area where CAG has had enough members where Marines and Naval would trip over each other. They end up being part of the same ship or small group.
I remember a time when there were, you know, a lot of Marine ships that would exist alongside Navy ships, and they had their own reporting structure, and they had their own like quadrant commander type role, and they had their own fleet commander roles. But over time, those are kind of merged together because people, they play with each other. So they're, you know, at the ship level, they didn't really worry too much about that. So we kind of allowed that to happen throughout the club. The internet helped break down those walls as well, I think.
Which that also means that if someone has a naval ship in their area, but they want to be a Marine unit, want to be a Marine individual for some reason, there's no reason in the world that they can't go ahead and be the Marine on the naval ship.
Oh, for sure. That's, to me, that makes a lot more sense than for Marines to have like a completely separate chain of command, because on the shows, what we saw were Klingons fighting together and acting as one unified force. So, you know, to me, it makes sense to have people with different roles within a ship. You know, I think of the Navy officers as often being the people who fly the ship and do the ship maintenance and stuff like that, while the Marines are the guys on the ship who get beamed down to planets to go off and fight and do a lot of hand-to-hand combat.
Depending on which one of the novels you've happened to have read, you've either got the Marine ships that are actually the ground troops that come in and do the stuff, or you've got on the naval ships, on the larger naval ships, you've got Klingon popsicles that need to be thawed out whenever they need a landing force.
Yeah, I've heard of that before, like the Frozen Warriors, that they just de-thaw and beam them out. It seems kind of odd to go through the whole work of freezing people when you have faster than light travel there.
Which is why some of the other books that I've read just have the Marines on board doing training exercises as they're going between systems.
Yeah, to me, that makes a lot more sense. If we look at works like the Klingon for the Galactic Traveler by Mark Okrent, it has within it a breakdown of the Klingon military structure. It has officers and then everybody else.
This is kind of late now, but I guess freezing them keeps them frosty. You're welcome.
They have all these officers, and then they just have like troops. And I think I'd look at the Marines kind of as being more so the troops of the army. They tend to get out there and enjoy that fighting. So much more than people who enjoy, you know, firing torpedoes and stuff like that. And I don't think either one is less honorable than the other. I think they're both very honorable careers.
Yeah, I think Keith DeCiancio's books had them broken up into, again, the Navy officers ran the ship. The Marines had a bunch of squads, and each squad had a particular leader, and then everybody, you either were that particular squad's leader or you were...
Right. I think Keith might have read that Klingon for the Galactic Traveler, because his books tend to gravitate more towards that makeup of the Klingon Empire than any of the other ones. And then Mark's book tends to connect directly to the shows. He bases all of his assumptions and stuff on what we've seen in the shows. So it's kind of like an extrapolation from that.
It's good to see authors going like that, so we get kind of a consistent worldview.
For sure. So we've talked about, you know, what CAG is, what CAG does, and, you know, how CAG's organized. We talked a little bit about how you join. You go to CAG.org and you click on the join link. One of the things that people ask me as a fleet commander every now and then is, you know, how do we pick a name? How do I pick a name? How do I pick a house? That's a couple of the questions that's on the application form. And I always try to answer them by saying, you know, you pick your name, whatever name you want to pick. You know, it's totally up to you. No one should tell you if your name is right or wrong. It's always up to you. But picking a Klingon house can be difficult. And I know you guys are in different houses. How did you come about to join those houses? And what do you think about, you know, people's different options about picking houses?
Well, Lord Vampire actually asked me if I wanted to be part of his house. And I said yes.
Were you in a house prior to that?
No, I actually wasn't. I didn't know where any houses were or anything.
Yeah, see, I created my own house because at the time I didn't know that you could actually join other people's houses. I thought it was everybody just made up their own house kind of thing. So I started my own, and I've actually had some people join it over the years. It's not a very big house, but, you know, it's got friends in it. And that to me is kind of an extra layer to CAG, is you get this extra little bit. You can make good friends within the organization.
My experience joining a house was basically the same. I was just asked and I said, sure.
Had you thought about creating your own?
I didn't really know it was an option until he talked to me about it.
And I was too busy trying to design activities for conventions. So
that's interesting, because it's like for you, that experience was the reverse of what I had, because I was under the impression that people made their own, and you guys were under the impression that you would join a house. So that's an interesting mix.
Well, to be fair, I wasn't even under the impression that I would join a house. I just wasn't aware that houses were a thing within CAG until somebody actually approached me about it.
We want people to know that when they join, they have all these different options, that they can make their own house, they can join a house that already exists, they can be houseless. There's lots of houseless Klingons within CAG, and it's not a bad thing to not have a house.
No, I went without a house for a couple of years before I was asked.
Yeah, I was asked, I think, end of December. So I went for quite a while without one, too.
There were just too many things for me to keep doing to even worry about that point.
Well, I thought at the time, partly I just didn't know about the house, but if I didn't have a ship, I didn't really look into other ways I could have been getting involved, because I thought having a ship was kind of the only way I could start something in my area. If I'd known about the house, I probably would have joined one sooner knowing about, but then again, directly related through Discord, and I'm glad that I ended up, it happened when it did.
That's good stuff. So once someone's filled out the application form and they submit it, it's going to get sent on to their to whoever the CO is of their area. So it may be a quadrant commander, or it might be a fleet commander. And you'll get an email. You should get some kind of contact back from that person. There's various different ways that people communicate within CAG.
Yeah, when I first joined, the big communication tool was Yahoo, but we've since moved on to other mechanisms on the internet to talk to each other.
Yeah, I remember before it was Yahoo, it was like e-groups or something like that.
So that even predates me.
When did you join? What year?
Oh, good question. 2014, maybe earlier? Not exactly sure.
I can't remember why I first joined either. I just know I got the Yahoo notifications for years, and I could never figure out how to turn them off. So I was always up to date on what was happening within the different sections of the club that I joined, because I kept on getting the emails and I usually read them.
Well, with the Yahoo groups, you can always sign up to get the individual emails or get a daily digest or a weekly digest. I still think I'm getting one or two of those every now and again from Yahoo. I'm usually on the daily digest though.
Yeah, I haven't seen much traffic over that email group in a while. I joined back in, it was 1994 or 5, just as the Demon Fleet was starting up.
A lot of it seems to be on Facebook now, because when I joined the CAG Facebook page, or sorry, the CAG, CAG.org, it was pretty new at the time, and there wasn't a whole lot going on. And recently, with the formation of the ship, I ended up being added to a lot of the Facebook stuff, and there is a lot going on there.
Facebook is very popular for CAG members. You know, some people use it, some people don't, so we try not to keep all of our communication in any one place. So, you know, once you join, hopefully there's a local ship that you can join, which is the best thing.
Well, I was going to say, a nice thing about Facebook is there's a lot more things you can do, a lot more things you can add to your posts, to what's going on. You can create events that you couldn't really do on the Yahoo groups.
So once you've joined CAG and you've been contacted, so hopefully there's a ship in your area. But if there isn't a ship, then you have to start your own. Starting your own ship can be a daunting task for some people, but it's actually much easier than it seems. All you need to do is to get another couple of people to sign up and who want to be Klingons and hang out together. And there you go. You've got the beginnings of a ship.
What's the minimum?
It's about 3.
We've had a couple of shuttlecrafts being formed in the Phoenix Rising. And that's a little bit less than a ship, but the idea is to get it to grow into a ship.
Right. If you're in an area where there's not a lot of Klingons and you can't find people easily, like you've tried, you've gone to conventions and you've gone to your local comic books and you've put up flyers, but you're not getting any feedback, then often in my mind, it's a good idea to create some kind of small, like as you say, a shuttlecraft, because that really gives a central focus point so that, you know, people visiting the website or going on Facebook and looking around can find a ship, per se, you know, a group that's starting there. So it's kind of like an egg. A shuttlecraft is like an egg that will hopefully hatch into a nice big ship.
And I assume that if a ship has to be three people, then a shuttlecraft is a minimum of one person?
I think for the purposes that it's being used within that quadrant, then yes, it would be one person. But it could be two people. It's just a way to get it known that there's somebody there who's trying to start up a ship, kind of thing.
It's just a way to get that seed started, planted, and growing.
I like the idea of it. I wish it was something that I could have had, because for years I was just kind of on my own, and I kind of got stuck in a loop where somebody was trying to get me in contact with the other guy in Kingston, and it took me a little bit to realize I was the other guy.
I've heard of that before. When I lived in Bloomington, Indiana, people would always come up to me and go, hey, there's this other Klingon guy in Bloomington. You should meet up with him. You know, he speaks Klingon too. And eventually I found out that it was me that they were referring to. Just didn't realize that there was, you know, they would talk to a friend of a friend kind of thing. And it just went round in a circle. It's very frustrating.
Well, if you wouldn't use something to disguise yourself like a costume, maybe they would know it would have been you.
Somebody just asked, in order to start a ship, how far away should the closest ship be?
I would say should be at least as far away as people would be willing to travel. So, or it depends on how many people there are. If you've got 50 people in a 100-mile radius, then you could start a bunch of ships. You don't need to start just one. But if you've got one person on one side of town and one person on the other side of the town, they shouldn't be starting two separate ships. They should just be starting one.
Yeah, I know in the case of the Crimson Fury, which I'm part of, we're spread out over a couple towns within a 2-hour radius.
You know, within a city, urban area, and maybe suburbia around that, you could have like one or two ships depending on how many people are there. But as you start to move out of that into the more rural areas, in my mind, it makes it easier for communication to have a ship cover a much wider area, because you've got a lot less people there. And I hate to think of people being left out. You know, they're just sitting around not doing anything because they can't get involved. So, you know, letting those ships cast a wide net, kind of, it makes it easier for those people to get involved.
There's also the other thing to think about too, is you need the size of your ship to have enough people for you to pull off the project, the activities that you want to do or present. So you need to have a critical number of people to actually work on something.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, I guess another thing that would factor into choosing a ship too is, where do you go to conventions?
Yeah, that would be a definite determination factor as to who you're going to get and how many people you're going to have and what activities you do.
Because I know that was kind of put to me, because I go to Toronto I live in Kingston and I go to Fan Expo in Toronto, and somebody had thrown out there, it's like, well, why don't you just join one of the Toronto ships or the ship in the Toronto area? And I was kind of hesitant too, because at the time I was hoping to start hitting up a lot more between Ottawa and Toronto. However, they started having several in Kingston throughout the year. So now I, for the most part, mainly stick to Kingston. And someone just asked, how does personality fit into forming a ship?
Well, you've got to have a certain amount of people that are willing to work together and work towards a single goal. That goal can be whatever you want, but you have to work towards it. If you've got personality clashes where certain individuals don't get along on a regular basis, you've got mature enough people, they're willing to say, okay, this is a project that we need to get done. Now, I don't necessarily like this guy, but I'm going to put that aside and I'm going to get this project done.
You want someone who's outgoing and outspoken to be your CO, someone who's, you know, very interested and also wants to be very active on a ship level. It's very important to have someone like that as a CO. You know, if you're going to start up your own ship, you can't just sit and wait for people to come to you, because they'll probably never show up. You have to actively go out there and seek.
Yeah, what you're saying basically is that you need someone who has the vision for what he wants to get done, that needs to get done, and then also has the drive to go out there and follow through on that vision.
And is able to motivate the people around them to join in on that mission, whatever it may be. You know, maybe they want to get to a convention with everybody in a costume and, you know, put on some Klingon panels or something like that. And then that person's going to need to get more people, is going to have to help those people get into costume, because, you know, as we'll talk about later, costuming, there's a lot of options, there's a lot of choices, and some of them are more difficult than others. But once you start up a ship, you become an officer. If you decide to start up a ship, even if you don't have a costume, you can become an officer. You begin to get the rank of ensign, and then the more effort and work you put into CAG, and the more you do to help CAG expand and continue, then that's what will get you promoted within CAG. You can move up through the ranks all the way up to Thought Admiral if you're brave enough and you desire to have a huge amount of workload dumped on your shoulders. Then you can, you know, there's all these different levels.
Someone's just asked, beyond conventions, what sort of activities are best for recruiting?
A friend of mine, and he was trying to pitch this to the ship, but we can never get enough people in the Omaha area to do this, is find out what your local marathons are and go to the people that are organizing them and set up a water station where you're presenting yourself as a community group, helping the community, and advertise that way.
In Cincinnati, I joined a number of different parades over the years, carrying banners. You know, that's always a good way to get recognition and publicity.
Captain JP in Des Moines had an interesting parade experience. He did a parade for Trek Days in Riverside, Iowa. And basically what they did is they took five Klingons, four of them holding hazard signs in a square, and the guy in front was holding a banner that said "Cloak Klingon Bird of Prey."
We just had some suggestions from the chat room: toys for tots, blood drives, and charity walks. And when you said marathon, for some reason my mind immediately went to a movie marathon,
which is another good option.
If you have a university campus nearby, that's a great place to go for recruiting.
On a college campus, if you had a group that was sponsoring you, think about Klingon speed dating, guys reading love poetry to their ladies and their ladies hurling large, heavy objects at them. Well, okay, stuffed animals.
Those stuffed animals can hurt too. Those button eyes, watch out.
As fast as some of those ladies were hurling them.
Yeah, another suggestion we got is a library is a good place to post flyers. You know, I suggested before comic book stores are a good place to put up some flyers.
Libraries are actually a good place to go and do readings for the library or help out with their reading programs. In other words, the opening day of the reading program. And if you're helping the library, they're more likely to put the flyers out for you and hand out the promotional materials for you.
My ship, we did a promotional video for the local library, and it's on Facebook somewhere. We got a number of recruits from people who saw that and were like, oh, we want to sign up and join in.
If you can find ways to help your local groups in your local area, they'll always be willing to help you out with promotions.
Staying in contact with local groups, and somebody just said SPCA, is definitely a great way. I know our local Habitat for Humane is always doing food drives for their animals.
Yeah, there is a ship, I'm not quite sure where it is, it's somewhere in the western United States, that their main thing is to do work at a local animal shelter, and their ship is all centered around doing work at that animal shelter, and they post about it all the time. It's good stuff.
There's a ship in Chicago that does the Toys for Tot. I noticed that was posted earlier. They do a Toys for Tot every year, and they're beating the United States Marines in toy donations.
That's the Bucks Cut, the Spirit of Honor up in Chicago.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about recruiting for our own ship. We talked a bit about how you can become an officer, some ranks and stuff. We've talked about Mind Scanner. So what other places are there that Klingons can go to talk about stuff? Like, we have Facebook, we've talked about that a little bit. We have Discord, which we're using to record this podcast. Are there any other places?
Which you haven't told people how to get to yet.
No, we'll include that in the links below. Click on the link below to join Discord.
And be part of the conversation.
And join us for Trek Watching.
And the CAG podcast.
Yes, definitely the CAG podcast.
And we also have an RPG room where we do games every once in a while.
Yeah, this is more different activities that CAG does. So earlier we talked a little bit about getting a uniform, That's a way to get yourself promoted to second lieutenant and to get the honorific tie. It's usually the primary way that people become an officer besides starting a ship. Now, there's a ton of different choices when it comes to costume creation. We have original series, we have Next Generation and movies, and we have Enterprise. And they all have very distinctly different styles. The original series is probably the easiest one to make, right? Because it's just gold tunic.
Long sleeve turtleneck with a tank top. And if you really want to go for an authentic belt buckle, bubble wrap.
Cardboard and bubble wrap. Was it spray painted silver?
Yes, it was. If you go to the museums today, they're all flattened. The air's gone.
Original series is obviously the easiest way to get into a uniform. But most people, they like something a little bit more advanced than that, right?
I believe so. There is an easy alternative to get into Imperial Klingon, but it's not really a good costuming experience. There's a t-shirt out there now of the Imperial uniform that you could just pull on.
It looks good. And it looks really good under a robe of some sort.
But, at a distance, yeah.
But it doesn't really count.
I've actually been having a lot of fun putting my costume together over the last month or so.
And you're building a Next Generation movies type uniform, correct?
Yes. I guess that's the best way to describe it. Yeah, I am going for the TNG look, primarily using a lot of foam.
Yeah, you're taking a really different approach from what I've ever seen before. Instead of using like vinyl and sewing it together, you're using pieces of foam in some way. I don't really understand exactly what you're doing. Can you?
Actually, the easiest way to do those is to take a t-shirt that's like one size too big for you, cut it down the front, and then sew those vinyl strips on.
What I'm doing for like the shoulder piece, for lack of a better term, just use a section of a floor mat, like this jigsaw floor mat. I cut it into a square with round corners, and then I just like lightly put lines in it to mimic like the vinyl sections to give it more of a plating look. I was going for more of like an armored plating look than just vinyl. And for the like the vest part, I had a yoga mat that I wasn't really using anymore, and just cut it up into strips and then glued them straight to a t-shirt. And so it seems to be holding out fairly well. And even like my belt, I don't have a belt that's big enough to go around the vest and my waist at the same time. And I just made one out of the straps of yoga mat that I had, and it actually works out pretty well because they have a little bit of stretch in them, and I really like the belt because of it.
I think that's a great example of the ingenuity that we have within CAG. There's so many different ways to make a uniform. That's a great way to do it. And I've heard of people making uniforms out of like old couches. They've ripped the fabric off of a couch and turned it into a uniform.
I think the best way to put this is there is no wrong way to actually make your uniform. If it looks Klingon, it is Klingon.
Exactly. And I think that's what the Enterprise show also showed us, because the uniforms that they have, they're not uniform in any way, shape, or form. They're just like patchwork, almost medieval looking outfits, where it's just like a karate gi kind of setup, but just made out of bits of different fabric and fur.
Yeah, you look at some of them and they look like they kind of use the vague idea of the TNG era uniforms, but they just did it all with fur instead.
Yeah, a few of them look a little bit more structured, but some of them just look, especially in that one episode where the Klingons stealing the dilithium.
You're thinking of the episode Marauders.
Yeah, where they're raiding that one little mining town and stealing all their resources, basically. But their uniforms are very patchwork and just thrown together looking. I think like the only common thing they have in is like the gauntlets look kind of similar, but just the shirts are all different.
The one thing I really gleaned from that particular episode was, how do Klingons carry a batleth if they're not using their batleth? I love that strap idea.
Yeah, I wonder how practical that really is, though.
Me and a couple guys from the house have been talking about like maybe like a hook system where it just kind of hangs off of your back and then you can just pull it out when you want, like a sword.
Well, the nice thing about a group like CAG is that you wonder about how well does this work, and you're able to make it and try it out and see if it works or not.
Right, and if you can't do it yourself, you can find someone who's going to help you. There's lots of people in CAG who want to help other people make costumes and uniforms and accessories and props and all kinds of other stuff. And that's one of the things that I really love about the club, is that if I don't know how to do it, someone's going to out there is going to know, and they're going to give me a hand.
Especially if it's something you want to test out, some new idea that hasn't been tried before, and we need to see, is it going to work?
Yeah, like a week or two ago, I took the templates for the gauntlets, the deluxe ones, and I just print out the templates, cut it out just to see if it would form together. And it worked pretty well. Like, some of my glue lines were a little rough, but I'm going to try it again a second time because I need two sets anyways because I'm doing a second mashup costume.
So what kind of glue do you use to stick the mats together?
Kind of depends on how clean of a line I need. If I'm not lining something up perfectly, depending on the circumstance and what's being glued to, I either use hot glue or I'll use Gorilla Glue, the instant drying type. If it's something where I need clean lines, then I start looking at contact cement.
Contact cement is great in that once you get the two pieces together, they're just going to stay.
Yeah, that's the great part about them. I bought a odorless one because I do a lot of my work in my basement, but I'm wondering if that was kind of my downfall because, like, with the gauntlets, when you look at them, the whole thing kind of bends back in on itself and comes back out. So it kind of has, like, a vague hourglass shape to them. And I found where it bend back in and out is where I had the hardest time gluing the parts together. So I'm going to use like a normal contact cement in the second one and do it out of my garage and open up the door. It's going to be cold out there because it's winter, but hopefully it'll work.
Once you have yourself a uniform, unless you're an original series, in which case you don't need to do anything besides a bit of makeup, maybe some pointy eyebrows and a goatee. But if you're doing Enterprise or TNG movies type Klingon, then you're going to need some ridges. There's lots of different options out there.
I would say for Enterprise, the ridges might be optional, but you definitely need the long wig because they do show that later on a lot of them are going to be losing the ridges.
That's true. There is that bit of crossover. So you could get by if you just have long hair and an Enterprise costume, you could be like, oh, I'm affected by a virus.
My issue was is that I tried to make my own ridges. I bought a glass head and I took some clay and slapped it to it and made my own formation. I was just going to paint the silicone on, which was just something I found on the internet as a way to do it. And I think, or sorry, silicone latex. And, the latex I used did not spread very thick. It was a pretty watery. And I just jumped on here and asked somebody how many layers they thought I should do. And they should like about 15. And when I got to 15, I was like, well, maybe I should put a few more on. And I don't remember exactly how many I had. I know it's between 20 and 25. When I tore it off, it was pretty thin. I think you guys saw pictures of that, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Latex spreads really, really thin. Hey, you would need lots and lots of layers to do it. But another way around that might be to use cotton in there for the ridges between your layers of latex.
Cotton, that's an interesting idea. After I was done with it, did not turn out the way I wanted. I cut off the straggly bits and the bumps were pretty rounded on my mold and they weren't showing up at all. So I just tried gluing them together to make them a little bit more pronounced. Next day after it dried and I tried adding some more silicone to the inside, I just kind of gave up on it and I ordered some off the internet.
So you ended up ordering one of those Space Warlord.
Deep Space Warlord. And he looks rather amazing.
So what is your opinion of that forehead? Is it well made? Well, how's the wig? All of that kind of stuff.
Oh, I like it. I might add like a bit of fabric to the inside of the ridge part because it's just going to be plastic sand on my forehead. I imagine I'm going to sweat a lot. It has pointed ears. Doesn't really bother me because I guess if I remember correctly, in Star Trek Into Darkness, the Klingons had pointed ears in that too. It looks like it might be easy to paint, which would be a huge plus. I bought a couple of them, mainly in case I paint it, I completely screw it up, but also for the local members, if they need a head, some ridges themselves, or just if I end up doing like cons, then I would have a couple extra ridges for people to take photos.
And that is a great thing to bring to a convention. If you do a convention, if you have a table or something, have a couple extra foreheads there that you can easily drop on top of somebody and take a picture of them and be like, hey, you can be a Klingon too. Bam, you're a Klingon.
Yeah, the nice thing is there are a lot of people out there that have been working on foreheads and painting the foreheads, and you'll find lots of YouTube videos or from the makers themselves videos on actually how to color your head pieces to the exact color that you want. You want it to, you know, to match your skin tone so that you don't have to make your skin tone match the headpiece.
That's what I did. I painted my forehead to be close to my skin color. Unfortunately, over the years, it's kind of rubbed off a little bit and I need to redo it. But I think that's the easiest way to do it, is change the forehead to match you. I see a lot of people who put on a forehead and then they put on a ton of makeup over their entire face. And they spend like 2 hours putting on a forehead. And to me, that's not fun.
Yeah, if you buy one of the Michael Westmore kits, you've really got to darken your face up to get it to match that headpiece. In fact, the captain of our ship went so far as to take one of those and bleach them. to whiten the headpiece back up so she could match her own forehead.
You're talking about the box set thing that came out, that's the hard rubber kind of forehead with a wig attached to it?
It's like putting a cap on. Yeah.
Yeah, I know a couple of CAG members who use those. They actually have used them pretty effectively.
Well, I still do, depending on how fast I need to get into costume and stuff. And yeah, as far as sweating is concerned, if you can find a foam headpiece, foam latex, rather than the hard latex, they tend to sweat through, so you're not getting the sweat against your skin.
For sure. The foam latex will absorb your sweat. I don't have a wig attached to mine, and I think that helps quite a bit. I just have long hair, so I just put on the forehead, and that reduces the excess sweating.
A lot of the ones that sweat are actually a full head, so even, you know, the wig is stitched into it, but you've still got a hard plastic head that you're putting on, and it's got nowhere to let the heat go out of you.
Yeah, I was thinking about, like, on the, if I managed to successfully paint one, I'd probably cut the ears out and leave it exposed so I have more area to breathe, but I'm concerned about how that'll look. I might have to put like a bungee piece in there to kind of keep it all together.
I have elastic on mine, just goes around the back of the head, kind of underneath all my hair, and keeps it in place. But then there's also people who will glue on a forehead and stick it on them, and it'll stay there all day long. That's also a way to do it. If you make sure there's a layer of glue all the way along your forehead line, then you won't get the sweat so much. It'll just kind of collect back there and kind of come out the sides, maybe.
And you got to be careful of what type of glues you use, because if you use Prozade, you're going to probably be okay for the whole day. If you use spirit gum, it's probably going to come off in a couple hours.
Somebody asked, do you use super glue?
No.
Big time no.
I actually know someone who used super glue to glue on some Borg implants one time, and it was not pretty when we took it off.
You got it off?
Yes. We came off with a layer of skin.
You know what? Like working with the Gorilla Glue, I find sometimes it can get all over my fingers, and like that peels off pretty rough. I usually have to let it sit for a couple days before I really try to work it off.
Well, Prozade is a glue for prosthetics. It's very strong, very stable. You need Super Solve to take it off, but it's designed to be worked with on skin.
Yeah, that's what I hear. That's a good one to use. CAG has a number of different awards that it will hand out for different kinds of activities. The first one of those we're going to look at is a battle notch. A battle notch you get for attending some kind of event where you're in a costume or you're advertising CAG in some way. So there's lots of different options on events. What kind of different events have you guys seen over the years?
Well, my focus has mostly been on conventions. And so we've been lining up a lot, lots of convention panels. We'll talk about the Klingon language to people. We'll talk about Klingon cursing to people. We'll encourage people to curse. We'll run fan tables at conventions. We'll do trivia games at conventions. I've even run a Makbara class at a convention.
The only event at con that I ever saw was just a panel about make mold of your head.
Yeah, so CAG has a lot of options in events. We've talked about a lot already. We've talked about ways that you can recruitment events. We've talked about, but there's other kind of events. You know, we have some suggestions from the channel here: food drives, blood drives, walkathons. Those tend to be good recruitment events, but there's also like fun events that you might want to do. So the ship I was on for a while during the early 2000s, we would go to conventions and throw party. That's all we would do, is just throw a great big party, and everybody at the con would come by at some point and hang out for a while, and you get to meet a lot of people and you get to talk to a lot of people. And it's one of those, it can be a recruitment event, but to me it's also a ship building event, in that you get to work with your shipmates in such a way that you get to develop like a good camaraderie kind of thing, because you're all working on a project together like that.
I think the food drives, blood drives, and walkathons kind of leads you into the next award category that you want to talk about, or kill stripes.
Right, kill stripes aren't another award that we give out. Kill stripes are given based on challenges. So what you have to do is issue a challenge to another club or a group or an organization. It can't be done on an individual basis. It has to be done on like a ship to ship or club to club.
It's a group activity.
Right. It's definitely a group activity. And you challenge somebody with a formal challenge. You say, you know, we challenge you to a bowling match or a blood drive.
Would the Star Wars Rogue One invasion classify as that?
Yeah, that was a good example. One ship challenged the rest of CAG, so every other ship and quadrant and fleet within CAG, to send people to go see Rogue One with signs that said everything's better with Klingons, and they had to go in some kind of mashup costume, and a number of people across the club joined in. So you win a challenge by winning a challenge. You know, if you have a bowling match, then if you win the bowling match, then you win the challenge and you get yourself a kill stripe. And there's different kinds of kill stripes based on who you won the challenge against. So you can get one type based on if your opponent was Klingon, you get a different type. If your opponent is a Federation member, you get a different type if they're, you know, a non-Star Trek club. But then we also have strategy marks, and strategy marks can be won by putting on events. So a lot of the events that we talked about previously, if you're the organizer of that event, then you get a strategy mark. It's a great way to reward people who are putting in the extra effort to create new things and create stuff for people to do beyond just trying to recruit for your club.
And beyond just helping out with the event, like the battle notches.
Right. Most people, if you attend an event, you're going to get a battle notch. If you organize the event, then you're going to get a strategy mark. And so strategy marks are, you know, much better than getting battle notches. So once you're in CAG, there's different ways that you can develop your Klingon persona if you've chosen a Klingon persona. If you've chosen a non-Klingon alien, then there's also lots of options and out there. There's a lot of different Klingon worldviews that we kind of see within the TV shows and the movies. We have like the Duras mindset of Klingons, and then we have the you know, the Worf House of Moog kind of mindset. We have the Gowrons and we have the Martok, and then we have the Kaelas. All these characters kind of have a different way of looking at Klingon Empire, and they kind of give us ideas about how Klingons might look at themselves and how they might develop.
They all have a different way of looking at how they can serve the Klingon Empire is probably a good way to put it.
That's a good way to put it. Yes, for sure. You know, I think like Duras, for example, he doesn't really want to serve the Klingon Empire. He wants the Empire to serve him.
And despite the problems that Worf ended up having with Gowron, even Gowron was trying to serve the Klingon Empire.
Yeah, I think Gowron is one of those characters. He started off with great intentions, and over time, he allowed the power to corrupt him, and unfortunately. And he became jealous.
Definitely. He definitely went a little crazy at the end.
Well, it was war, and war will bring out different personalities in you.
The end with him, it really felt like he was fighting for control of the Empire. It really had nothing to do with the other wars he was having. It felt like he was spiraling out of control, and the only way he knew how to regain control of the Empire was to go to war with somebody else and unite the Klingon Empire, but then their first few attempts didn't work out too well.
Of course, the first few attempts, he had the Changeling Martok working for him.
This is true, and that's probably why the war started to begin with.
But I think what you ended up seeing in the series when it finally wrapped up was that those Klingons that were into actually serving the Empire in a way to make the Empire grow are the ones that stayed around and endured.
We have these different characters. So what's the best way for people to, you know, new members who have just signed up, what's the best way for them to learn about like the Klingon culture and our language and history?
Well, first of all, to probably watch a lot of the shows that talk about the Klingon culture. And there are lots of websites out there that are going into an analysis of what we've seen on the screen.
Yeah, right now we're doing Trek Watching, which is actually watching all of those episodes.
Yes, it's fun. You should come out and check it out. If you have any suggestions, send them to me.
When is that?
Well, thank you for asking. It's every Sunday and Tuesday night at 8:30 Eastern Standard Time. This week, we will be doing Trials and Tribulations from Deep Space Nine, which was a fan-voted episode for this week.
Another method for finding out a lot about Klingon culture is take a look at some of the books by some of the writers that have been steeping themselves in Klingon. And I think we've talked about a couple of these, The Klingon Way or a lot of the Keith DeChancio ones.
The Klingon Art of War was another one that we've talked about.
Yep. To learn about the language, the best things to read are The Klingon Dictionary, The Klingon Way, and The Klingon for the Galactic Traveler. Those will give you all the information you need to be a fluent Klingon speaker. However, that's probably not the easiest way to learn. So there's lots of resources. There's groups on Facebook. There's the Klingon Language Institute at KLI.org. They have an online course. There are videos on YouTube. There's actually a series called Learn Klingon the Easy-ish Way. It's a lot of fun because you can just kind of repeat along with them.
There's a Klingon teacher from Germany that's on YouTube also.
Yes, Levin Litar. He has a series of videos that are very good, and he's very well-spoken Klingon.
Another thing for culture, the book isn't out yet, but if Hidden Universe Traveler's Guide Star Trek Vulcan is any indication, the Kronos one that's coming out this summer should be a good one too.
Who's the author on that one?
I'm just looking. I'm not seeing the name.
Not quite sure. They're the same person who produced the Traveler's Guide to Vulcan, I believe.
Dayton Ward did the Vulcan one.
And is it the same person?
Yes, it is.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that's going to be hopefully a good one. Other resources, there, if you can pick them up, there's the Pach Bach. That's the story of Kales. It was translated by Mark Okrand with help from the Klingon Language Institute. It's a pretty good description of the epic of Kales in a kind of a poetic form.
And with a topic like this on Klingon culture, this is where a small group of people like your ship getting together for a regular meeting can just discuss it with each other. And discussing things is always a good way to learn.
Like, if you can't make it to the Discord channel for Trek watching, it might be a fun idea just to do it on your own with your friends, just in somebody's basement, have your shipmate over and watch an episode and discuss it as it goes along, because that's all we basically do on Discord. Maybe the only difference would be is randomly interject with what information I found on the episode.
Yeah, some great extra facts. It's always fun to watch the channel as we go along.
I think last time they took a lot of it into like the voice chat. I just actually got a microphone that doesn't have a lot of feedback, so I might try that next time as well, because that'd probably be a little bit more fun than just typing, having like real-time interaction rather than having like 5 seconds ago interaction.
It's like Mystery Science Theater 3000 or whatever.
Yeah, it's pretty fun sometimes. Like, you get a good episode where it's a little bit cheesy and people start throwing in comments about it. It can be pretty fun.
Yeah, and most Star Trek episodes have a little bit of cheese in them somewhere.
What? Plot holes in Star Trek? Come on!
No, never.
They're always totally consistent.
I'm sure when I talk about the episodes, I probably sound like I hate every single one, but I actually love all of them. I just love nitpicking them.
That was one of my favorite things. Like, I always remember I got a copy of the Nitpicker's Guide to the Next Generation, and I would look through it and go, oh, I spotted that one, that one, that one, that one, that one, and like checking off all the ones I saw before I got the book kind of
thing. One way you can really tell if somebody loves a series is how they nitpick it, because if they're really nitpicking it, they're paying attention to it, and if they hate it, they would just ignore it.
Yeah, that is a good point. That is a very good point.
Oh, and I nitpick it a lot. I know some people in the first few episodes, some people did, I got comments about, well, they should go easy on the episodes. This is a TV show. It's like, no, I like it. It's just, this is what we're here for. We're here to discuss the episode, and I'm going to pick it apart.
Yeah, I think there's some people who don't get nitpicking. They think we're nitpicking it because we don't like it, and we're trying to push it, you know, break it down and make people think that it's a bad show, and it's not that at all. It's, we love it so much.
They're thinking we're bad-mouthing it.
Right, they think we're bad-mouthing it, but we're not. That's part of the fun of watching it. You've watched it so many times that these things are obvious. I've watched Tasha Yar lean over and wave as the doors close so many times now that you don't even realize that shouldn't be in the show.
It is fun, like that we are kind of beyond the point where you don't just watch it and appreciate it, but we go beyond it. Like, nitpicking is like the next stage. It's like, it's not that we hate it, it's that we love it so much that we love to tear it apart and get the deeper meaning in it.
Definitely.
So how do we get back on track?
Well, we're kind of near the end of our journey. We have covered most of the major points, I think. At this point, I'm going to ask if any of our listeners, because we actually have four people listening, which is pretty cool. If they have any questions that might pertain to, you know, people who are joining CAG for the first time and are just getting started, things that, you know, hints and tips that they think may be useful, or any hints and tips you guys have from your experiences.
Well, one of the questions I'm seeing right now is, do Klingons really hate Tribbles? Well, to answer this, at one of the conventions that I organized activities at, we had a lady build about 50 Tribbles for an activity that we had. The activity was the Great Tribble Hunt, or Tribble Dodgeball. We put Tribbles all over the place. Kids were to find them and throw them at each other. The one with the most Tribbles at the end lost.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Tribbles at Archon at the 25th anniversary, I ended up playing some kind of strange game where we would beat Tribbles back and forth down the... hotel corridors with large bats between each other. It was a lot of fun. And we got a lot of raised eyebrows when they saw like two Klingons just beating these tribbles back and forth down the hallway.
We got a question.
Sounds like an activity I need to steal.
It was a lot of fun. I think I was playing with the Marine Commandant. It was me and him were just like smacking these guys around.
We got a question. Do bribes really help get ranks? With me, it personally will, but I don't know how the other two feel.
It depends on how much the bribe is. We can talk later.
Or, you know, how often you bathe as to how rank you get.
Well,
we do need to develop Tribble Golf.
Well, people are thinking of questions. I just want to throw out there too. If you have footage of stuff that were at conventions and you don't really know how to edit it, you feel free to get in contact with me through Facebook or through our email, which is
podcast@cag.org.
There you go. And feel free to get a hold of me through that, and I can take the footage and I can do something with it, like what I did with the panel about head sculpting, because it would be nice to start getting more stuff like that out there on the CAG YouTube page, so that people can learn to do that stuff on their own.
And showing how the various activity panels, not the talking head panels, but activity panels actually work would be good videos for people to try new activities.
Yeah, anything really to do with CAG would be great to see, and I'd play edit stuff together for people.
Yeah, I've done some recording of panels that I've been on. Often it's difficult to get a good recording of a panel that you're sitting in, especially if you have to film it yourself.
But find somebody to do the recording for us at panels, then we can get more of these activities recorded and more of these activities on the web. So who's a good cameraman out there?
If your ship records something or has some news, then CAG.org is a great place to go to share it. You can post after event report, a description of what happened at the event that you went to. And usually that's a good way to show off and to recruit on the web, because you can post on there and we can share it on Facebook and get the news out about it. We're reaching a lot more people than maybe you could reach in your local area just from posting signs or doing your events. Because if people aren't attending those events or don't happen to be there when you're there.
No, that's 100% true.
Another reason for reading the after event reports would be to look for the type of activities that the particular ship that attended the event went to and did, and see what they think worked and what didn't, and try them yourself.
Yes, CAG.org. We have all of the mind scanners, nearly all of the mind scanners online, so you can look through those and see what people have done in the past. We have pages of after event reports.
Someone just asked, if I am a member of a ship and the CEO is not very active, what can I personally do to be more active?
That's a good question. So if you are on a ship and your CEO is not active, then my suggestion is to, first of all, contact your CEO's CEO. So it could be a quadrant commander or a fleet commander, and let them know that your CEO is not responding. Then you should go out and do stuff, because your name will then get out there and people will sign up and go, I heard of it because of, you know, Lieutenant such and such. And that will then come through, because those applications go to your fleet commanders and they'll see that you're the person who's active and doing the recruiting. And, you know, maybe you'll end up being in command of the ship.
Yeah, it's a very good thing. If you have something that you want to do and you can't get your CO to help you with it, maybe he's trying to encourage you to go ahead and do it yourself and get it organized, so you are learning organizational skills.
Well, I imagine that his question was more about just a not active one, but I assume that you don't really need anybody's permission to throw a CAG event, do you? Or do you have to have a CEO's permission?
No, if you want to throw in a CAG event, as long as you obey the 5 rules, then everything's good.
And if you're going to a convention to organize an activity, the convention runner is not going to care whether or not you're the actual CAG person in charge. They're just going to see, oh, wow, I got somebody who wants to do something.
Yeah, if you do something and then you come onto the CAG website and you post an after event report and you're not the CEO, but you were the person who organized the event and went out and did all that stuff, your information will pass in front of people who can look at that and go, oh, this person did all these things. They should get these awards and such and such. And those people make sure that nobody's getting forgotten as long as they're interacting with that stream of information.
So it sounds a very important thing is to make sure you do your after event reports.
It is very important, but it's not a rule, so you don't have to do it.
At the very least, just to document what you did, what worked, what didn't work.
Consider each event an experiment. Every experiment needs to be written up and recorded. And that's basically what the ARE is a recording of what it is that you did, what worked, what didn't, and what other people can do.
Someone in the chat room suggested plan a Christmas party can be thrown by anyone on a ship. He, she invites the local members to attend, and it's a good way of activity by individual crew members.
Yeah, that question came from Captain, or that suggestion came from Captain Coron. He's going to be our guest. He's going to be our guest on a podcast about recruitment, and he's got lots of great ideas because he's been doing that kind of stuff for many years within camp.
I look forward to talking to him.
I see we have a question there. What is a brewmaster? I guess that would be a person who is a master at brewing things.
Or at least someone who's given a shot at brewing things and actually succeeded in coming up with something.
I know there are a few brewmasters within CAG. I've met one personally, and he's created some fascinating drinks.
Now, are these brewmasters that you're talking about actual brewmasters, or are they just concocting and combining different beverages together to come up with their drink?
The person I know personally made, like, they fermented the alcohol themselves.
That's what I would think of as a brewmaster.
Right. There are several people within CAG who have done fermentation. I tried to ferment and make a alcoholic beverage once. It didn't turn out too well, so I don't consider myself a brewmaster. But I know a few people who have brewed up some mighty concoctions over the years.
I'm sorry, is this like an actual title you can get within CAG, or is this just a joke that I'm missing?
It's more of a fun thing. Within CAG, there's a lot of titles that people can be given or can acquire or can award themselves based on activities that they do. A brewmaster is basically somebody who, you know, they like to brew alcohol, so they call themselves a brewmaster. Usually it's someone who's been doing it for a while and they have some experience. You know, somebody who's just, you know, brewed one drink isn't going to call themselves a brewmaster. There's some respect, you know, just within the system itself, even though there is no system. There's no organized system.
The IKV Malota actually has their ship captain as a brewmaster. And there is actually a medal out there in the Klingon culture for brewmaster.
Yeah, there's a whole, within Klingon fandom, there is a whole subculture of things that people have created and traditions that have continued. And some of these traditions have kind of, over the years, they've changed and they've expanded, but there's some that have kind of stayed very true to the course as well. Yeah, a brewmaster is kind of a play on the term quartermaster. CAG has quartermasters that are people that are responsible for helping other people build their uniforms in some way. Our current CAG quartermaster is Captain Maruk up in Chicago of the IKV Bakka. We spoke of that earlier, the Spirit of Honor.
But actually, I think Brewmeister, which is the German term for it, predates quartermaster.
Oh, I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does. Somebody asked what a Dahamaster is. That's a warrior within the Klingon Empire who has fought so many battles and recruited and trained so many warriors that they are...
1,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's like you have to have fought 1,000 battles and trained 1,000 warriors and written 1,000 songs or something like that. There's some ridiculous set of restrictions on how to get it.
But it's basically a high-level warriors award.
Yeah, the Klingon Assault Group doesn't have the term Dahamaster. It doesn't award that out to anybody. There are some people who are CAG members who are called Dahamasters because they've been in the club for so long and have contributed a ton of stuff to Klingon fandom, and other people have given them that award. You know, like I know Robert O'Reilly and J.G. Hertzler occasionally call people Dahamasters.
And along that same point, there actually are Klingon hand-to-hand combat tournaments that go on at various places throughout the country.
Yeah, there used to be a lot more. Around in this area where I live, we used to have the Klingon Year Games. There was a big event. Dozens and dozens of Klingons would come to a campground and we would basically go through a whole bunch of different challenges and battles, and you would win awards.
The IKV Malota, again, actually runs some of these tournaments and has filmed a lot of these combats, and they're available on YouTube. I think if you Google IKV Malota, you will actually go to where the link is today.
We started a Twitter account at CAG Podcast. If you're not a part of the Discord group or just throughout the week you think of questions, feel free to tweet them at us and we'll compile a list.
Excellent. We will be having some different podcasts coming up. We're going to have one on recruiting with Captain Coron as our guest. He used to helm the Force Recon Division division within CAG, which worked on recruiting people. We're going to have a podcast on uniforms and makeup, and then we'll also be having some on making props and then some other ideas. Feel free to send us any ideas you have for podcasts to podcast@cag.org. And thank you to everybody for listening.